Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Countdown to Destiny. We have 4 days, locally, state, and nationally, 4 days before the election. There will be an election in our lifetime. I believe it will be the most seminal, most important, poignant election that we've seen in the history of America. It will determine the destiny of our nation for our children, for our grandchildren, and for the future generations, and what kind of America they will live in. We're talking with Matt Schellenberg today. Matt's the former District 6 city councilman. He did a stand-up job during his 8 years. Hated to see him get termed out, but that's the way the system works. But Matt has a good handle on these issues, especially the local and statewide issues, as well as the knowledge he has for the national issues. And we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, the half penny. They call it not half cent, a half a percent. They're talking and calling it a half penny sales tax increase on the premise that we need to build buildings and modify buildings, et cetera. Matt, just recently I heard one of the talking heads on television talking about the half penny sales tax increase and said we need to put in new technology and new equipment, et cetera. Now, I thought they started off talking about, and they've been promulgating this idea, to build new buildings and to repair and remodel old buildings. And yet now I hear them squeezing in that, it's like you were saying earlier about how they'll take dollars and just shift them around in a fluid fashion without carrying them, spending it as it is supposed to be budget-wise. So speak to that issue. You were talking about before our news break. I had asked the question, in the old buildings, do we find a difference in what you'd call the grade point average of the GPA? Does that make a difference? Do we produce better students by having newer buildings?
Well, let's regroup here. According to their own last year when they proposed it, now we talked about, remember, they're going to rethink how they're going to spend the asset, but they're only going to build two new buildings, Doctor, going forward. They're going to renovate all those old buildings. We'll still have, in the state of Florida, the oldest school buildings in the state of Florida. So when they say we have the old school buildings, that is true. Renovating the schools will keep them still old. So I am baffled by the lack of leadership on the school board, as well as Diana Greene, to think that people are going to be bamboozled by, hey, we have old schools, we need to do something. Well, we're only going to potentially build two new schools. How does that help the old schools? We're still going to have them. And second of all, schools don't make students better. Parents make students better. Involvement with teachers, students, administration, all those things contribute to the success of a student. Buildings do not. Now, why they're in disrepair and why they have allowed them to get it like this, it goes back to the past school members, including Tom Yazzuri and that whole group of Democrats that have been dominating the school board for the last 20 years. And look at all the people that are supporting this asset. It's the people that put us into this situation in the first place. I don't want to name all the names, but Tom Yazzuri was there for 8 years. Why didn't he do anything? Who's promoting the half cent? He is promoting the half cent. And so I find the people that have been reckless with the money prior to this, they are out there because they go, we need the money, because they didn't spend it well. You know what? I can't help what the past is, but looking out to the future, that half cent, you have three groups of people that are interested. The unions, you've got property owners that go, if we don't pass this half cent, they're going to charge us more on the millage rate on our property, so we'll end up paying for it. And thirdly, charter schools, because the charter schools actually get a portion of this. So the charter school people want this half cent so they can build new buildings. They're the ones that are building new buildings. It's not the Duval County school system that's building new buildings. And I'll tell you one other thing. A lot of the people are moving to, if you can look at the demographics, they're all moving south, southeast of Duval County. But there's a charter school that will be coming in the next 2 or 3 years. It's called Ideal. They have been very successful in other places. And you know where they're going to be building their school? These are charter schools. They're going to go into the Northwest Quadrant and build new schools to keep neighborhood schools. That's what we need. We need to have neighborhood schools. We don't. We spend, last time I looked at this, Doctor, I'm throwing a lot of numbers out. The cost of moving kids, children on buses, the fuel cost was $40 million. Mm. So if you don't have to move and transport kids all over the kingdom come, and you keep them in neighborhood schools so they can, the parents can participate with after-school activities and know the teachers better and all that kind of stuff, that enhances education. Two new buildings of the half cent doesn't mean anything. They're just, that's like I said, it's a rope-a-dope. We're still going to have old buildings.
Matt, let me ask you a question that I believe our listeners need to understand. We're finding today a greater and greater level of interest from the parents' standpoint for private schools, Christian schools, parochial schools, co-op educational systems, charter schools, etc. Why should we continue to put a Band-Aid on an old system when we ought to have it on the basis where the dollars follow the student, wherever that parent wants to place that student in the educational system?
So the unions don't want the money to follow the student or the parent. They want the money to stay right where they are so they can dominate the school board as well as Diana Green, who's the superintendent of schools. What you're finding is that even in my district, District 6, we have good schools. We have more charter schools in this area than any other school district in the county. And you know why? Because parents want to love Mandarin. You live here. I live here. We don't want to bus them all over Kingdom Come. Every charter school in this area is booked. They have a backlog of students, of enrollment. There's a great need for parents to be able to send their children to charter schools. And that's why over 20 years, the growth of students in Duval County hasn't edged up. And in fact, it has edged down. We have grown in population in Duval County. Where are the students going? They're finding those alternatives, as you mentioned, including charter schools.
Yes, in fact, on a national level, I've read a lot of statistics on that. On a national level, the overwhelming majority of parents are wanting alternative to the governmentally controlled schools, i.e. the public school system. Matt, let's switch gears.
Well, let me ask you this. Excuse me, Dr. Youngblood. Wasn't it the fact that Governor DeSantis encouraged charter schools, that he got enough of the African-American community to vote for him, and that's why he's governor? The
yes,
African-Americans recognize the education, and they're being held back by Duval County and unions and teachers that don't care about anybody but themselves. That's the key.
That's the key to it. And one of the things, if I can throw this in, that may or may not resonate with you as much as it does with me, does this sound kind of like this Nancy Pelosi with we won't know what's in the bill until we pass it, as far as the in reality, how they will use this half-penny increase on sales tax? Or could we better compare it to what was called with one of the previous mayors in his administration with the better Jacksonville scam had the increase of sales tax, and we're still paying for that, and yet most of the projects were never done, never finished, and or were illegally completed?
The answer is that that mayor was John Delaney when it was passed by the city council. It wasn't unanimous, by the way. But the problem with elected officials, and I explain this to my constituents all the time, I never overpromised and underdeliver.
Right.
Our elected officials need to underpromise and overdeliver. John Delaney, when he was mayor, overpromised and underdeliver. When I was on the city council, $250 million worth of projects that were promised or not done. And remember, the courthouse was supposed to be built for $195 million, because that's what he said. It was a plug-in number. I have verification of that from reliable sources. And it ended up costing $425 million. So we're paying for that until 2030, and then because of the bad decisions, again, by Mayor Delaney, or the pension that he promised those police and fire. They're good people, but he overpromised them and overpromised and underdelivered for the citizens, because we have, because 2030 we'll be paying for that half cent sales tax for the next 25 to 30 years because of the pensions got out of whack, because he overpromised. He guaranteed in the drop program for the police union 8.25% forever. And if you use the rule of 72, you would double your money every 8 or 9 years. So a policeman can retire at 50, start with $50,000. In 9 years, he'd have 100. Another 9 years, he would have 200. In another 9 years, you would have $400,000, and he would have guaranteed money in that investment account. And right now, Dr. Youngblood, tell me who in the wild world of any investment could guarantee any more than, you know, 4 or 5% in the world we live in right now.
When if they guaranteed 4 or 5%, they'd be way out in left field, because most of the time anywhere from 1 to 2%.
They would be put in jail.
That's right. Absolutely.
He should be
put in
jail.
Let's talk about something that is very important on the ballot, that there's 6 amendments for the state of Florida that's on the Florida Constitution that they're wanting to amend. But I want us to focus on one. It's Amendment 3. It's the unitary election for the primaries. Tell our listeners why Amendment 3 should be – well, I've said no on all of the 6 of the amendments because I'm against modifying our Constitution. I believe it needs to go through the legislative process, which is the way our constitutional republic is set up, with the representative form of government. But let's focus in and drill down on Amendment 3. Tell our listeners what Amendment 3 is about and what it winds up doing.
So it's been basically called nonpartisan. It means anybody can vote for anybody in an election cycle. So those that choose to be a Democrat, historically you can only vote for Democrats, or a Republican. And the NPAs, non-party affiliation, they don't get to vote for anything. This bill will allow those NPAs, as well as Democrats, to vote, to get a Republican elected, the weaker Republican, or conversely, the Republicans and the NPAs can go to the Democratic person and say, let's get the weakest Democrat. I think that parties are important to this extent. They get to choose who they want to represent the party, good, bad, or ugly. The MPAs have made a decision that they didn't want to be associated with any party. So why should they have the right to interfere with party politics of who should they nominate to be the best? So I, like you, am voting against the nonpartisan election. It allows poor people, worse people to get elected, because you want to vote against somebody instead of for somebody.
Absolutely. So I would say to all of our listeners, my recommendation, vote no on all of the amendments. And I say that because I'm tired of our Constitution being made to look like Swiss cheese. We've had 127, I think it is, amendments to the state Constitution since 1974. And since the inception of our federal Constitution, we've had only 27 amendments. We need to go through the front door, not through the back door, if we want any type of legislative changes. Matt, there's at least 2 other very important issues that I need for us to touch on during the balance of our time. One is where Garrett Dennis has proposed a bill, introduced a proposed bill in City Council to set up what I'm calling a spy commission. Now, they're calling it a citizen review board, but it's a spy commission where citizens will be able to ride with police officers, write up reports about police officers, analyze and do a Monday morning quarterback as to what they think law enforcement should do in the city of Jacksonville. Are you familiar with that, and exactly how should we view that? I don't know if our listeners are familiar with it, but let me state this. It's Ordinance 2020-584. Was just introduced by Councilmember Dennis, and it is egregious. It's not but about a 6-page bill, and I'm looking at the summary of that bill and some recommendations from some on that. But speak to our listeners about that. Do we need a 14-member citizen review board to second-guess what law enforcement's trained to do and to second guess what law enforcement decisions will be in relationship to carrying out their task and their job. Speak to that question and answer some questions as we talk about it. They're setting up the criteria for that review board, 14 people they want to have on it. What is your knowledge of that, and where do you stand on that? What do you think this is about?
Okay, first of all, there, as a legislator of the 19, you can get the city attorney to write any bill you want and introduce the bill. This will never see the light of day. There might be some discussion about it because Garrett Dennis will bring it up in committee, but there will be absolutely no vote beyond, you know, certain maybe three or four people that are in favor of this. It's a ludicrous bill. It can all, these people, Dr. Young, you'd be amazed how many goofy bills get introduced that never see the light of day. It's embarrassing to me that Garrett Dennis goes in this route, and it won't see the light of day. And I think it's a disruptive to the policemen. And you know, let me just address this policeman issue because of the last 7 months. The actual disrespect that people in blue have, the amount of people, police people, both men and women, they are retiring at an unbelievable pace right now.
That's right.
Because their spouses don't want them to be involved in this situation. So they're leaving. Who's going to replace them? Who as a spouse will say, go, honey, I want to be a policeman. And the spouse goes, are you nuts? So it goes on both ends. I mean, I know that you have a son that's a policeman. I am honored that he's there. They need the respect. And you know what? For 95% of the community, they are well-respected. Unfortunately, there's 5% that say no, no, no. And you know what? Think of all the news. People that love the police, they don't get recognized because it doesn't make news. I love it. Listen, when 19 years. I met incredible amounts of patrolmen as well as officers, et cetera, and many retired. They're just unbelievably good people. And in any society, any group of people, you're going to have one or two that are just bad apples. And investment business, and the religious area, and construction, you name it, banking, there's always one or two people that are bad people. That doesn't mean you change the system. These are bad.
Well, that's exactly what I'm concerned about. It's the reason I brought this up. And by the way, I have the, I don't know what you'd call it, inside track of information that two city council members have already been appointed by Hazuri to work on this. And they've already in that two member working committee. They're working with members of the Department of Justice for the implementation of part of the community policy program. They're looking into the best practices that other cities, blue cities, by the way, that other cities have done in setting up this type of citizen review board. And part of their analysis, Matt, that I understand, would be to determine how they can redirect some of the JSO funds for better outcomes. Now, okay. That is nothing less than defunding police.
It's not going to happen. First of all, look at Tom Hazuri. In 30 years, he's never had a real job, maybe 40 years.
That's right.
Has he ever accomplished, honestly, he's a nice guy. Has he ever accomplished anything important going forward, except, as he would say, the HRO? Truly, he's a man of few skills, limited brains, honestly, and he is unfit for a business community, okay? But he's found a little niche. He loves the adulation. And he's president of the council, which I don't clearly understand. Okay, mm-hmm. That baffles me beyond belief. But he's council, and you know what? Luckily, he'll be gone in 9 months, and all the stuff that he is proposing will be dead on arrival. Okay?
Amen. Well, I'm thankful to get that kind of insight on it. It has me gravely concerned. One other issue that I think deserves our top priority thinking, and it is something that is at the boiling level now. Let's talk about what I call the giveaway program for Lot J at the Jacksonville Stadium. This is between the city of Jacksonville, the Jaguars owner, Shad Khan. And there's a lot of, for example, the city's talking about $233.3 million in subsidies for the coming out of the pockets of the taxpayers. They're talking about a $65 million interest-free loan. They're talking about a $77 million payment from the city coffers for infrastructure and up to $92 million for that. And Conn would pay $13.4 million in taxes for 50 years. That is the total of $13.4 million over a 50-year period of time. What is your knowledge about the, what I call the wanting to give away Lot J from city ownership to Shad Khan? Should that be done?
No. And, in fact, I wrote a letter to the editor that was published about 2 weeks ago. So, you know, the problem is with city council and people, they have a they're in a bubble. When you're in a bubble, you only hear the what's in the bubble, and it gets ricocheted, and you hear the same thing back and forth. But like you, I'm well-read. And so I suggested in the letter to the editor, let's give Shad Khan the Gateable. You might agree with me, by the way. Let's give Shad Khan the Gateable and Lot J instead of the $60 million, and you do whatever you want with it, except we get to keep the Florida-Georgia game, and we get like 10 other event, events in the stadium. But what you do, we get the those 10 for perpetuity. And the reason I say this is they've been, the Jaguars are good people. I don't think they've been as generous in the philanthropic area. In fact, they haven't been. The Weavers have been unbelievable when they own the team, and they've been unbelievable since they sold the team. So let's adapt two things. So new stadiums. Everybody wants a new stadium. L.A. Stadium is $5 billion. The Las Vegas Stadium, new stadium, $2 billion. This Lot J is just the a dribble of the amount of money that Shad Khan will want over the next 10 to 20 years. And it's always like, I'll leave otherwise. Have at it. You either take the Gator Bowl and you deal with it, and you can do what you want, make the stadium great, or leave. I'm done with it. But he's very powerful. And one, a couple other things. When he bought the Jaguars, he paid $750 million. It was recently valued at $2 billion. So he is putting up, and by the way, his net worth, I think, is $5 billion. So he's putting up 1% of his net worth. We're putting up taxpayers' money. We don't get any benefit. In fact, we get very little benefit from the lease we currently have. It is the most the terrible. I explained in my letter to the editor, it's like owning a beach house on the ocean, obviously, paying $100 a rent a year for the next 10, 15 years, and we have to maintain it. This is exactly the deal that the Jaguars did with the city back in 94, 93, when we got them to come here. It has lost this. I've lost my interest. They don't have a good team. They make it deplorable. It's a deplorable team. They're 1-6. You know, just, you know what? I would love to have a great team. I would love to support them, but I'm not going to bury this community that needs money and give it to him. And let me add one other thing. The mayor was on a forum with Melissa Nelson, Sheriff, what's Mike's name? Sheriff Mike Williams. Whatever. What?
Mike Williams.
Mike Williams, I'm sorry. And Lenny Curry. And they were talking about the crime. We've had 20% more crime, killing, homicides in Jacksonville compared to last year. And the question is of the mayor, from this reporter or maybe a citizen, what are you going to do about it? He goes, I'm going to look to see if there's money in the budget to do something. He is borrowing $200 million to do Lot J. You mean you can't find additional money to get this homicide issue under wraps? He's insane. And by the way, when he ran 8 years ago, 5 years ago, he said crime was the issue. He badgered Brown about it. Here we are. We're right back in higher the crime rate than we did when Alvin Brown left office. And he goes, I'll look into the budget to see if we can do anything. It is the most despicable response I have ever heard when he's asking the citizens to be on the liability of $200 million. And even at 2%, after 10 years, that's an additional $40 million we have to pay off. And it just accumulates. Money is not free. It costs money. Spend the money for the quality of life, which is what I said in the letter, for parks, great neighborhoods, and quit piddling around with people that already have the money. Give them the damn building, Gator Bowl, or what we call TIAA, and let's move on.
Yes, absolutely. Well, one of the things that they have used, Shad Khan has used some cookie-cutter fact sheets that he's used in North Carolina and in Texas and several other places where he's done projects. And he used those same fact sheets. For example, he claimed, and then the mayor promulgated that information, that it would have about 1,000 people with permanent jobs, and the little caveat, over a 40-year period of time. And then it was discovered that that wasn't real at all. It was just a fact sheet. And then they narrowed it down, maybe 800 jobs, maybe 500 jobs. They're using a smoke and mirrors game and I'm saddened to see the mayor going along with it, to try to rob the taxpayers in the city of Jacksonville. And as I said, it's to provide a $233 million subsidized loan, $65 million interest-free loan on top of that, and a $77.7 million toward the public infrastructure. And with that, it's a sliding scale, could go as high as $93 billion or $1 million, and Khan would pay only $13.4 million taxes. And they, Matt, you're probably familiar with this. That $13.4 million would be put into a trust account that could not be touched by the city for 50 years, on the premise that in 50 years, that $13.4 million would be equivalent to taxes that should be paid over a 50-year period of time. But the city won't have access to those taxes for 50 years. That makes a lot of sense. I'd like to do a job like business like that.
And I would love to do the deal that he did. I would be glad to do that. By the way, it's not just this. Remember, we knocked down the Hartbridge Expressway downtown because of this. So that's another $50 million, $50 million. So it's never ending. This is why I say cut it loose. Give him the property and have him do whatever he wants with it. And if he wants to say that we're on the low end of the football stadium, that's okay. Spend the money. It's yours. Do whatever you want with it.
Well, Matt, one of the things that I think we can wrap up with this.
Dr. Youngblood, you're terrific to allow me to do this. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, I am so delighted that you could come on board today. One of the things I think we can wrap up with is the thought that we need to pray, seek the Lord, ask God to intervene, and to bless our nation, our city, and this election that is so critical, that God would bless it, God would give victory on it. Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, looking forward to joining you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1/2 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 and on Sunday mornings at 8 on 100.3 FM. For expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety at 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. Tune in and invite others to listen.